Call this meeting to order at 5:05 p.m. We are beginning with a study session on the superintendent's 100-day report. Dr. Hinman?
Thank you, President Shoemaker. And for this presentation, I actually will be in the well.
So excited.
So first and foremost, let me start a little bit about what the 100-day plan, what the intent of it was to basically fully immerse myself into the West Virginia Unified School District, including talking to as many stakeholders as I could, stakeholders including teachers, principals, administrators, classified members, city council members, members of the community, parents, and I have a list that I'll provide you shortly of people I spoke to. Admittedly, it's a kind of a partial list because at some point I kind of stopped writing names down because I would bump into people, I'd have quality discussions, but wouldn't necessarily have them calendar. Most of the names you'll see on the sheet of calendar. Before I also begin, I want to talk a little bit about the format for the study session. It should be interactive. I have no problem standing before you for an hour and 45 minutes and talking. I have 5 hours worth of data to present. I really do. But it's more powerful if you have questions, if there's something that you'd like to inquire about. The reasons why staff is sitting in front of you is because, A, they wanted to be here, and two, I thought it's important to recognize I don't have all the answers, and there might be some questions site-specific that you want to answer. We may not have the answer to your questions, but we, of course, will get you follow-up information that you don't have. I'm also going to ask the board one more thing, a request to keep in mind that this is a 10,000-foot view of the West Virginia Unified School District. I have been in several school districts, as you know. I have seen the data in all of the other districts. Some of them would be classified as high-achieving, some more struggling, but I will tell you, the West Virginia Unified School District data is at or near the top of that data. It's good data. It's good data if you're comparing it with others. You might argue that it's an area that we need to grow. And that is going to be my argument all the way through, is that I would ask you to look at this data as baseline. So it's not the time to say, gosh, we're not doing a good enough job in that area. It's the time to say, okay, if that's our baseline, our expectations of board is that we're going to be better in that area the following year, and so on and so forth. Longitudinal data is what I would ask you to think as you see this report. With this information being baseline, where do we go in 15-16, where do we go in 16-17, and eventually, if you improve every year, you'll actually, meet the NCLB goal, which is all students being sufficient, which was the problem with NCLB. If they put unrealistic benchmarks on student achievement, that we call a hockey stick. So the first few years gave you a nice level, minimal growth, and then they shot you up to 2014, in which all children had to be 100% proficient, which obviously would never happen. So why would you set up a structure in which you're going to fail? So my hope is, as we look at this data, that we're looking at it through the lens of constant improvement in all areas of measurement. That's kind of really what I'd like you to see as we go through this.
So to begin, I'm going to spend about an hour, and I'm going to read this report to you. So if you'll all settle in. I practiced it, and I can get it down in about 60 minutes, I think. No, I'm just kidding. But I want to thank all of the IT department and Ms. Hawkins and everyone at the district office and the school sites for providing me this data. It truly is everything we do. It's the technology plan. It's the emergency plan. It's the district plan, the LCAP, strategic plan, all of their site plans. And I encourage you, any board member that wants to take this home with them, I know, President Shoemaker, you like a lot of data to bring home and study. So
okay. I like the data. Just email it.
Yes.
I'll take your binder home.
Okay, so let's begin. So the first is that I promise not to read to you this evening. This is an unscripted presentation, unscripted study session, except for my opening paragraph. This is the transition between January 1st of 2000 and June 9th, 2015. My highest priority since January 1 has been to meet with key members of the West Virginia Unified School District community. I appreciate the board members that helped me provide the list of community leaders and opinion shapers of whom I should meet. In each of the meetings, I have asked variations of the same three questions. And you're going to hear me touch on this over and over again. What works well in the West Covina Unified School District? What can be improved in the West Covina Unified School District? And how can we help each other be successful? Because West Covina truly is a community. The overwhelming response to the first question is that people are very satisfied with the education provided by the West Covina Unified School District, its fiscal management, and its people. I want to be really clear that that's exactly what they said. They are very, very pleased with their education, with its fiscal management, and its people. That was universal in almost everyone I spoke to. The most common response to the second question was concern about the district special education program. Now, I warned Colleen and Dr. Lord that I would be saying this because it is true. That most of the stakeholders I spoke to, one of the topics that came up consistently across the board was a concern about our special education program. I know you're aware of that. I know that you, we've made some changes. We've hired a new director. Dr. Lord is doing a great job for us. That's not going to change overnight, but you need to be aware that not only are you aware of that, but your constituents are as well. Then there was a broad array of other issues, which include diversity of the district, how to ensure equal education for all. The continued need for improved facilities came up several times. A focus on college and career, and you'll see some more data on that later, and the need to expand technology throughout the classroom. Those were the general themes. The question was met with the final question. Question three was met with a universal offer of support and assistance. Everybody wants to be part of West Covina Unified School District. They're excited about our district. They want to participate. They want to help. They want to support. They want to donate. However, and I've already talked to this group here about this, is there's a little bit of a belief amongst your stakeholders and your community that it's a bit of one-way communication. We want to help, we want to support, we want to donate, but they don't get the feedback from the school sites that they would like. And that's something that we've already talked about in length, and we have an action plan to put into place to help correct that a little bit. But it's not because the community is not willing to participate. The staff and community leaders are proud of the association with the district and have offered their continued support. So I'm not going to spend the time, I'm sure not going to read through this, but I'm just going to flip through it really quick of individuals I've met with over the last 100 plus days. You have a copy there, so you can take a look at it. I did add Trustee Flowers brought Lisa and Allison to me today from the Plaza West Covina, which was really great. And they just outpointed us, how can the mall help you? It wasn't what can you do for us, it was how can the mall help you? And we've talked about a few ideas. So the reason I added them is to remind me that there's been several other vendors I've spoken with, but I just didn't get them on the list. I want to point out students, Diego Portillo, really interesting that a student called and made an appointment to come see me. He's a third grader, I think. That lots? Yeah, third grade, right? And he wanted to interview me about my profession and how to get into the workplace and what I was proud of and what we do. But then he invited me to visit the classroom. So I got to come to Monta Vista and visit the classroom, and I took about 20 questions from the students, and it was great. We had a good time, and then Mom had quiche, which was awesome, too. And then, I think you know, I substituted a class at West Covina High School for three periods to talk about getting to know kids, sit with them for 45 minutes, and just try to get them to interact. And they were more than willing to share their thoughts with me about West Covina High School, the administration, that was a joke. School of
the
Hall,
food.
Yeah. Student leadership team members, and then random sampling during site visits as the principals escorted me around. I had an opportunity to pull some kids aside and just have real nice chats across the board. So, as I thought about all my discussions, and I prioritized in my own head, these are the issues that I want to share with you, that I think that the board needs to continue to support or address in the near future. Facilities, modernization, and technology infrastructure is something that was continually discussed. Enrollment, that's a reality that we all have talked about. We need to make sure that we continue our enrollment in West Covina Unified School District. You've already done some great things to, I think, happen. Negotiations are always an important topic that we need to address and continue to address. Relationship with stakeholders, city, business, education partners, philanthropic organizations. Again, we need to do a little bit better job reaching out to them and meeting them halfway. Special education, obviously, I touched upon. College and career readiness. You'll look at the data and you'll see not only is that does the data show we need to continue to work on that, but through my interviews and discussions as well, that became very apparent. Academic program, I listed it under academic program because there are probably 20 bullet points I could have put. Common curriculum, professional learning communities, summative assessments, formative assessments, you know, the IB program, dual immersions are all things that I think that we need to keep our eye on as we move forward. And then, of course, not just technology infrastructure, but technology. Now, the unfortunate or fortunate, depends on how you look at it, as you grow in technology, there's no way around not adding staffing. Because when you add computers, when you add networks, when you add software, that's something that this board is going to have to wrestle with probably in the next 24 months as we continue those discussions. And, of course, every time you add 100 computers, somebody has to load all those computers and so on and so forth. So, and then, of course, my personal comment to the board is obviously management assessment is a big part of what I will continue to do. I need to continue to assess educational services, human resources, business services, and of course information technology didn't used to be one of the big major supervisory points of leadership, but now it is. It's becoming something that we really need to make sure that I track personally, and then of course we need management of the sites. So, moving forward, we're going to move on to look at that data I described. Yeah, I should drink water, but... Okay, as I go through the data, again, I want to reiterate, look at this data not as an aha, or oh my gosh, or I can't, oh boy, that's good, that's bad. I'm asking you to look at it from a baseline perspective. This is where, right, wrong, or indifferent, this is where we are. Now, the board, at some point, at another study session, or we can do it in an open session at the board meeting, has every right to prioritize what they think are areas that we need to give significant intervention to versus others. This is just kind of the whole kitchen sink, if you will. The staff and I have worked very, very closely. The principals have gone back and talked to their staff about what we have taken from the data. So, and you have that. You have a list of a recommended board goals. So we took all this data you're about to see. We discussed it. We tabled it. We put it up on the board. And we came up with what we thought was what goals we would recommend as a staff going forward. So, going backwards first, we no longer have the API, Academic Performance Index, but it's fair to look at it. What I would say to the board is you can assume that as we go through this CST, California State Standards, and API data, that whatever trajectory you were on would continue. So if you look at this, this is comparing West Covina Unified School District and the state, you can see that the district has a very good trajectory. Going back to 2009, 781 API, finished off at 830. That's awesome. Matter of fact, I'm going to argue to you that if you have an 830 API, that there are other areas that don't make a whole lot of sense. Because they're showing on the CST, the California State Standards, that they're doing well, and yet some of the other areas that we're going to look at shortly show a deficiency, which I can't answer why. Except to say, don't lose sight of that. 830 is a very respectable number. As you know, the state of California, their mark of excellence is 800. So if you're a school district of 800 or over, you've arrived. You're doing a great job. So as you continue to look at this data, just remember, I don't want you to forget that number. 830 is a great number. Okay, I broke it down by elementary, and I will not go through these, but what I would ask you to look at, I'm going to go back to here. Think longitudinally, again, I would say. When you look at data, always look at what you want to see are the bars rising. not. Now, if for some reason in 2011 this came down to 780, there's no time to, we don't need to get all wound up. If we look at it longitudinally, we see that, yeah, that was a blip. Maybe the state changed the test a little bit. But our test scores continue to rise longitudinally. That's what we're looking for. And as you look at this data, this baseline data, I want you to picture a five-year bar graph in your head. I want you to see where we are in 14-15. Then I want you to envision 2020. And I want you to see what should that be, whether we're talking about A through G, API, SAT, PSAT. Think of that continuous growth. Recognizing that where you're at right now is good. We're good. You know, it's Jim Collins, good to great. Okay, API, let's take a look at that for a second. And by the way, the problem with showing a slide like this is you naturally want to compare school to school. And I will tell you honestly, we're not going to say names now, but I have been told many times which is the better elementary versus this one, or this was the top dog, and now this one is, and oh, we have a concern about this one. What I would ask is that's irrelevant. What you should look at is, does that school show continuous growth? Even if you had a school down here, if they have continuous growth, and you project out 15 years at that growth level, they're going to get up here. But I guarantee you that school would have bigger challenges. Middle schools? Great growth. Again, if you look at our middle schools, they're doing a great job. A little edge with flattened down a little bit here, but we're moving all the way up here. Holmcrest, 852. Walnut Grove, great growth. Assume that these will continue to rise because there's no reason not to assume that if you're still doing the CST. Your high schools? Coronado, I got to tell you, with a hand there, Phil. Only testing juniors, and you never know what crop of juniors are going to come in year to year. Those are pretty decent numbers, I got to tell you. Edgewood over the 800 mark, and West Covina High creeping right up. Obviously, if you're at 830, just doing the math, you can tell that the middle elementary schools are doing a great job as the district as a whole to boost that up. Not that the secondary is not doing great, but you can see that bump comes a lot from the great work that they're doing at that level. Okay, if you can look at the adequate yearly progress, proficiency rate, English language arts, in state versus the district. Again, I personally believe that you should measure yourself against yourself. That really is the indicator you need to look at, not how an LA school is doing versus a Beverly Hills school versus an Orange County school. How are we doing? That said, this is also a political reality. When people buy homes, they look at these scores. They do compare your schools to the state and to the county, and you can be very proud, in fact, that your schools continue to rise above both of those entities. And let's look at it longitudinally. Nice growth. Okay, very, very good. The proficiency rate continues to grow from 61 to 68% over that 4-year period. That's at English Language Arts by grade level. What you'll see statistically, and obviously we won't do it today, it'll go over time, but all school districts will start to see a trend downward as the kids matriculate into the higher grades. And that's a great discussion for another time. I don't believe it has to happen that way, personally. I believe we can't actually stop that trend.
Thank you.
Now, this is the one we really need to pay attention to. This is the one that I think really matters. Because if you truly believe that all children can learn, and if you truly believe that all children learn differently, and that differentiated instruction is important, and taking socioeconomics into account is important, then you have to ask yourself, why, what are we doing to help the students with special needs. What do we help doing with the socioeconomically disadvantaged? The research just screams that ethnicity and culture has nothing to do with student achievement. It's all about socioeconomics. Socially disadvantaged students are always score lower. The question is, what are we doing to help the students? What are we doing to recognize those students? And then what interventions are we putting in place? EL, English language, I will tell you, you're going to see some data that combines later the socioeconomically disadvantaged and the English language learners as compared to the English-only students. Not white, English-only. And that's where you hear about the achievement gap that we always talk about. What is the achievement gap? And you're going to see that in West Covina, you have an achievement gap, as does everyone else. But the question is, what are you doing about it? That's the question that you, I know, are asking us. Yeah, Chuck, that sounds good, but what are you doing about it? And we're actually going to have answers for that in the next time you sit down and have this discussion. Matter of fact, I'll tell you right now, and I'll probably repeat it, that it is our hope that the board will call us together again about the end of first semester of next year and ask us the very question. You've identified these areas, you've identified these concerns, you've asked us to hold you accountable. What are you doing? And we're going to have some responses for that. And we're going to be able to show the data of how we're improving. CSTs, California State Standards Traditional Rates, English Language Arts, I broke this down into three or four slides. But what I want you to see, really, if you just watch, you know, proficient, advanced, that's all good. Let's not worry about those kids. Okay? And what we need to start worrying a little bit is the basic, the low basic, and the far below basic. Here are the numbers. And I will say that these numbers are too high in second grade. But as you progress to sixth grade, you'll see not a whole lot of significant change in that box. And then to 11th grade, there's dramatic change. So going back from second to sixth, it stays about the same. And then by 11th grade, it's dramatically lower. So it's a fair question to ask, what's going on? Why is that happening? Again, we hope to be able to give you more in-depth information. I asked a group of second grade teachers, I think, just pull them together. And I challenged them and just asked them the question. This is in West Covina. This is about 3 months ago. I said, if we were to give you all of the resources, just theoretically, pipe dream, if we gave you all of the resources that you needed, could you guarantee that all students leaving your class in second grade would be at reading level? At grade level. And I didn't explore it any further because it wasn't the time, but they all said yes. Now, what does that mean? I don't know, but the bottom line is, if our kids don't read at grade level coming out of the fourth grade, you're going to start getting this. It's imperative that the work we do in elementary focuses on reading and math, because those are the two gatekeepers for college. If they're not proficient in reading and math by the eighth grade, they are not going to be ATG method requirements, and they're not going to go to college. And our goal is not necessarily, by the way, to be clear, our goal is not for them to go to college. Our goal is for them to have the choice to go to college. Right. I mean, that's really clear. There's really a lot of coming out of high school and going into careers or going to trade school. That's great. I support it wholeheartedly. But the crime is when the kid wants to go to college and can't because he didn't meet the basic requirements that he needed. Okay, AYP, proficiency rate in math, state and district again. It's always good. There's nothing wrong with whether we have bragging rights. Here we can brag that, in fact, the West Virginia Unified School District continues to rise above the state. And I'll also say that, you know, you're improving nicely, 63 to 68 versus 56 to 60. AYP proficiency rate, adequate yearly progress in math by grade level. This is troubling. And there are some legitimate rationales as to what happens here. A lot of it, you're going from fifth grade, you went through elementary, we got the same teacher, we have the same classroom, you can spend as much time as you need on a particular subject area, boom, you throw it into a middle school situation where you're rotating, you have a class only 45 minutes to the day. The curriculum dramatically changes here, from here to here. So these are areas that we'll spend a little more time with the board talking about. More importantly, we'll talk about what are our strategies to help improve upon that. Math, as in all districts, I apologize for being so repetitive, math, as in all districts, is a great concern. And I'm going to show you a slide here in a moment to show you that. Subgroups, you'll see, interestingly enough, math being the universal language is not as dramatic as the English language, but still, your EL students, your economically disadvantaged students, and your students with disabilities trailing behind, but not as bad. Not as bad. Asian, Filipino, I will tell you, I think your white population is lagging behind here too, if they were historically. And there's no excuse for your Hispanic population to be lagging this far behind. But that which is measured gets done. That which is monitored gets done. If we don't look at the data, how do we address the data? So that's what this group of individuals is doing. That's what they've done. They've gone back to their site councils. They've gone back to their teachers and just have asked the question. Is this acceptable? Yes or no? Can we do better? Yes or no? And if the answer is yes, how do we do it? And you'll see that there are some very, very, very creative people in this room. CST proficiencies in math, again, I'll do the same thing. Second, 6-11. And you're going to see 11 become very dramatic. I did algebra because we start taking different exams at that point. They don't take the CST in math is really broken up in high school, which no longer exists. But you'll see, this number is over 50% of our kids are basic level low in math. And CST's in 2015. I'll argue that's probably the same today. So, and then what you'll also notice, if you take this number and you say, A through G, college going, I wonder if they correlate. They do. Mm-hmm. Math has got to be a priority. We have to do something to ensure that these kids move up into the proficient, and these kids move up at least into the basic. Our California High School Literature Exam, English Language Arts, these are great numbers. So, I mean, good job. But the California High School Exit Exam is an 8th grade proficiency. So what we're saying here is that most of our students in the West Covina High School District can pass at the 8th grade level. And that's what it is. But it's a good number. I would be a little concerned that it's flat here. Here. But again, you're in the 90s. I gotta tell you, of the places I've been, that's good. That's a good number. Everyone should be very proud of that for what it is. You know, except what it is, but you should be very proud that you're in the 90s. County struggling a little bit more, state struggling a little bit more. California High School Exam ELA by school. Obviously, we cannot hold Armando responsible. He basically is getting kids that are really struggling. And his job, one of his major jobs, is to get them to graduate. And we just went to his graduation, mm-hmm. and every one of those kids passed the California High School Exam. So he's able to take those kids who are struggling, probably haven't passed it at their home school, don't have the credits. So I always want to make sure I point that out when we see something so dramatic. But when they look at Edgewood, they're 92%, 3%. West Covina, 90%, that's awesome. Very, very proud. I don't even think something like this is... I talked to Trustee Polis about this in more of a generic term, but when you look at your board goals, there are some that we can expect some extreme growth in. So when you set that mark, what is your goal? Something like this might be a 2%, 1%. You know? So that's why I would ask you if you want to put goals in that board report, that you spend a lot of time discussing what that means. We want to set ourselves up for success, but growth. Growth, but success. California High School Exit Exam, Math, District, County, and State. Again, great job. Now, see here's, this is where it becomes very complex. You know, 92% of district students passed the California High School Exit Exam in Math, but you only had, what was it, 36% who were proficient in algebra? So there's a massive disconnect there. And it's our charge to investigate that and find out what we can do.
I don't know if it's appropriate to ask a question
now.
Did you document the proficiency rate as well? Because I hear you said this is passage rate. What about the proficiency rate on the case? That's a little more telling in terms of proficiency.
No, but by all means, we can pull it. So, absolutely. So, I'll make a little note of that. Okay, my school, again, very, very respectful. I find it really fascinating, by the way. Even looking at Coronado, their scores are higher in math than they were in the CSTs as well than ELA. But again, 96% at Edgewood, come on. That's phenomenal. Just comparatively speaking to other schools, that's just phenomenal. 90%. You know, in my mind, that would be a correlation to the state saying, what's the mark of excellence? 800 on the API. I would say that they hit that on the California High School Exit Exam. So another big kudos to you guys. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about college and career ready. So you're going to see me shift gears a little bit here now. So I went from pretty much nailing it. Great job, efficiency rates, California High School Exit Exam, API. You know, a few areas of concern that we need to address a little bit. Now we're going to look specifically at college and career ready data, and I will be honest, this is an area that I think our baselines need to move dramatically. Let me rephrase that. Notice the baseline. The expectation should be that that our scores will rise dramatically in the area of college and career. Now, because it's college and career, a lot of this data you're going to see is secondary. So that does not let elementary hook any way, shape, or form. I have often asked secondary biology teachers in particular, and I would say if I gave you 32 kids in this classroom who were at the ninth grade level in reading, what could you do? And they just throw up their arms and get all excited and say, oh my gosh, if we had a full class that read at ninth grade level, we would all pass. We'd do amazing things. But obviously what happens is oftentimes they get in with kids that for one reason or another, I'm not pointing blame, but you won't know when you have fourth and fifth grade readers in a biology class, it makes instruction very difficult. If you do differentiated instruction, in theory, we're all at the same level. What could you do? It's a good question to ask. Okay, this, and you won't hear me say this very often, this is not acceptable. The amount of students that are taking the PSAT at our schools needs to rise dramatically. And I can assure you that it will. And I know that the principals already have an action plan in place to ensure that you might even see double-digit percentile growth here. You might even see 75% digital growth here. And it's just, you know, that's what I was telling you about when you have your board goals. You know, maybe you'll have a 1.5% increase on this goal. But on this goal, I would hope you would want significantly more, and we're going to provide that for you. But the key to the PSAT, by the way, it's not the PSAT itself, it's the follow-up afterwards. It's meeting with College Board and explaining what do the scores mean on the PSAT. And it says to the institution or the school, here are areas of proficiency that these students might excel in, AP courses. Based on the PSAT scores, this student might be perfect for AP Lit, or they might be perfect for AP Psych. That data comes out of the PSAT. And of course, the National Merit Scholarship comes out of PSAT as well. I don't know if we've had any National Merit Scholars any time in the recent past, but always looking for a reason for celebration. SAT and ACT participation. Again, this is an area that I think we can improve upon. I have already talked to the principals. I know they have an action plan. This is just weird. There's just no way around it, and I can't. I asked Chitrovatori about it, and he doesn't know. It's his first year, and he's just digging the data. But this is a great, this is the kind of great kind of graph that you can show your teaching staff and say, "Wow, check this out. We didn't know this. What do we think? Is this 42% sound about right for the West Covina kids taking the SAT, ACT?" And so what do? How do we change that? How do we change that culture? A through G completion rate before you react. Let me just tell you that what you have here is pretty normal. This is pretty normal. 42%, 40% of your graduating seniors meeting the A through G, and let me just clarify for anyone who may not know, A through G are the courses required by the Cal State and the UC system to apply for those courses. You have to meet what's called the A through G, which is the 3 years of math, 3 years of science, 4 years of social studies, 4 years of English, so many electives, I won't go through them. But, so, where are we falling off here? Now, it could be something as simple as, by the way, if a student takes a college course, they go to Mount SAC, and we say, okay, you can take that biology class at night because you need to take it. If we don't get that transcript in, he will have not met the interview, and actually he has. So we need to do our due diligence and find out what's really going wrong. Why aren't the kids meeting them? A lot of the kids who are in credit recovery, particularly in math, are taking credit recovery courses that do not meet the A through G requirement. So even if it's in one subject area, they won't meet the A through G, and therefore they won't qualify for the UC Cal State Fiscal. That is really, really clear. You need to have them prepared for the Cal State UC system. You don't even have to go there. There's nothing wrong with community college. There's nothing wrong with going to tech school at all. But options. We need to be sure that they have options. And we need to make sure that we sleep well at night. That we gave them the opportunity to do that. That we put the interventions in place so they can do that. That we had the relationship with family and student. So we knew exactly where they needed to be. The counselors. Make sure that they were communicating with the students. You can't tell a junior you're 20 credits behind A through G. It just can't happen. You have to make sure they have a four-year plan and they understand where they need to be. At the end of the day, are you ever going to have 90% A through G completion rate? No, you're not. But you can do better than 42. And we can move that up. And at some point, maybe we'll say as an organization, well, I think we capped out. I think we can live here. This is good. But that's not it. And I know this group behind me and an action plan to make sure that we push that forward. Advanced placement, international baccalaureate participation rates, 10, 11, and 12th grade students. This is good. Let me rephrase that. This is baseline data, and that's what we're going to start with. That at Edgewood High School, 45% of their student 10th, 11th, and 12th graders take one or more IB class. And at West Covina High School, 31% of its 10th, 11th, or 12th graders take an advanced placement class. I just want to go back to that 830. I want to go back to that 800 mark that West Covina High School had. If your API is at 800, then that number needs to be significantly higher. There are a group of kids who could and should be in advanced placement, but are not. Now, the million-dollar question is why? And now I answer that for you. I don't want to get into a lot of depth tonight. But let me tell you why. Because they don't want to be in it. I don't want to take an AP class. It's too hard. My friends are in another class. I don't want to do work over the summer. That's where the culture has to change. That's where the kids have to see tomorrow. You've heard me say this before, and I'll be repetitive. Picture a school of in thirds, and I'll just pick on those of you. So picture a group of a third. The top third are those kids in that top bar on the proficiency rate in math. They don't need a lot of counseling. They know what college they want to go to. They know what courses to be in. They know what
they need to put on their resume, they need to know, they've already, they have all that, and our counselors may not have done it. You know, maybe their parents are college graduates and they've walked them through it, or they hired a college consultant to help them. They're good. Now move to the bottom third. The bottom third generally has a lot of support as well, whether it's social service, whether it's special ed, whether it's pyramid of interventions, whether it's intervention class, whether it's counseling, they get a lot of help. The middle third is the lost group. They're the ones that don't necessarily get the push from the top or the support from the bottom. They're the ones that come home from school and the parent says, "What'd you do today?" "Nothing." "Got any homework?" "No." We're going to solve that problem too, by the way. So that's the culture change, to make these middle kids see that tomorrow does matter, and that the future does hold options for them. They can't just flail. So this is baseline data. And this is a good number, by the way, right here. Edgewood High School. You know, if you're between 76 and 80%, that's a good number. Now, the key, though, is to maintain that number and increase the amount of kids taking IB classes. And I can tell you from my experience, from my research, and the data shows, if you take that third, that middle third I just described, and you push them up, they will be successful. Oftentimes, some of your more advanced placement or IB teachers will say, those kids don't belong in that class, they're going to bring us down. You know, we have this powerful dialogue with my 18 kids. It's really great. They're going to bring us down. And I will tell you statistically, district school after school after school, and I can show you the data, that has increased our participation 100%. Their pass rates maintain or rise. So the argument is literally hundreds of kids for a decade have not been in classes they should have been. Mr. Trattori has a plan here, so you know, or a great discussion. That's a great baseline. I would love to have that baseline. And now, I actually pulled this slide, but Trustee Polis asked me to put it back in, because it's really fascinating. But there are so many unknowns here, which is why I pulled it. But it's a great question to ask. So if you look at this, this is the class year. So in the class of, this is 2014. In the class of 2014, 747 freshmen entered and 676 graduates. Now, I don't have any more information for you than that, but what a great question. And Trustee Polis even asked me, where did they go? Do we know where they went? That's the challenge that I've asked our staff to do, is have this discussion. Do you know where they went? Did they drop out? Don't know. Did they transfer schools? Don't know. Did they just disappear? Don't know. What's really great is the state caught on to, this is how the ADA used to use, this is how the dropout rate used to work. It was by statement. So if a school said, if I said to Mr. Seaman, "Mr. Seaman, where are you going?" And he, all I needed from him was to say, "He's going to go to school in Arizona," or "We're going to move down. We're going to Colorado. I'm going to go to school in Denver." That gave me the right as an administrator to check the box and say he's continuing his education. I don't have to mark him as dropout. But the state finally wised up, and they said the school could no longer do that. So now when Mr. Seaman leaves, he says, "I'm moving to Denver. I'm going to go to high school in Colorado." I have to ask which one. I have to call that high school in Denver, Colorado, and I have to confirm he enrolled. And if he didn't enroll, I have to mark him as a dropout. So statistically, you'll see the dropout rates drop statewide because people aren't doing their due diligence, aren't doing their work. Our kids are actually dropping out, which we know they are, at historically high levels.
Dr. Gimmon, I'm assuming that this is all three of our high schools? Two of our high schools, West Covina High and Coronado, or just West Covina High?
Eric, do you know?
I didn't
know. What's that?
I did not.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know.
I'm just looking at the sizes, because West Covina has had...
How big is your graduating class?
Low fives.
now, but we had a big bubble.
Yeah. So it's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I think the argument would still be the same if it's just a wider school, but yeah. If you're looking back here at 814, that's probably district-wide.
Yeah, that 676 looks too low if you add up Edgewood, Wascovina, and Coronado.
It does not have all three.
Yeah.
Could be Wascovina and Edgewood.
Because Wascovina is about 500.
Right.
And last year was 200. Like and then Coronado is anywhere between 80 and 100.
Yeah.
I will find out. I don't know. So
okay. Yeah, it looks. I think it's just Wascovina High.
But the point that I think Ms. Pauls is making is a good one.
Where are they going?
To identify where our kids are going.
Thank you, Trustee Poulos, because I do like this slide. I liked it when I read it today.
Okay. This is data that we have to address. You'll see some baseline data here. But again, that which is monitored gets done. You have to be aware of it. So I talked a little bit about the achievement gap earlier. So take your EL students and your socioeconomically disadvantaged. And the reason I put them together, this is a high percentage of your ELs are also socioeconomically disadvantaged.
Right.
So if these are Ds and Fs, then I want you to pay close attention to the D and F, because I'm going to show you some F data after this. And you'll see the F data is significantly smaller. But I want you to look, first of all, at the gap. So if you take, these are your socioeconomically disadvantaged, so 30% of our middle intermediate high school students, our middle intermediate school students, have a DRF in English Language Arts, 18% of your non-socioeconomically disadvantaged. So that's the gap. That's the achievement gap right there. But now, I want you to do the math. I want you to add these two together, and that's the percentage of intermediate schools that have the students that have a DRF in English Language Arts. So, needless to say, A, we have some work to do, but B, this is great data to recognize and ask the question, why, and what do we need to do? The 12%, by the way, is a good number. I know that might sound odd to you, but research, historical, comparable data, 12% gap. If you can get down to single digits, you're home. You've done a great job in the achievement gap. So that's not my concern in this particular slide. My concern is the fact that 48% of our middle school kids have a DRF.
Absolutely.
Matt, same. Except here, over 50% of your middle school kids have a DRF in math. Mm-hmm. A gap is 15%, and I know this is actually a decent number. If we get that down to single digits, I think that would be great. High schools, 9%, that's great. It really is. Socioeconomically, 21%, 12% of your EOs are non-socioeconomically disadvantaged, have a DRF. I'm harping on this, but your achievement gap in the West Covina Unified School District is low. Doing a great job. Teachers are doing differentiated instruction. They're working with those kids. They recognize those kids. They're doing the work. The flip side of that is you have 33% of high school kids getting a D or F in the first language arts. Math is a bigger concern. 18% gap, but 58% of your high school kids have been there. Now, I have to floor the board and tell you this is not a West Covina Unified School District problem. It all looks like that. This is uncovering the horror of what goes on nationally in math and English language arts. We celebrate that top third, we help that bottom third, and we allow the middle to flop. Now, looking at this data, I can tell you that this group is fired up. You may not look at it right now, okay? But I can tell you they are fired up because they're excited about with the transition and the curriculum, the special learning communities, and what the Common Core can do to help move this data. So now, this is where I go back now, and this is another problem. Because if you look at, let's just look at math, and you have 14% of high school kids with an F. But I just showed you that you have 58% with a B or an F. So I think what's happening is a lot of teachers have big hearts. They really do. They care. They're in it for the right reason. And I can't give that kid an F. He's a nice kid. He tries. But at the end of the day, I would argue that the D or an F is irrelevant. C. That's the mark. So, as we look at this, you know, I would start to, you know, I love this baseline stuff. You know the number one reason why? Whoa! 8% of high school kids get an F in PE.
They don't show up.
That's the number two reason.
They don't dress out.
They don't dress out. That's correct. They don't have the right shorts, shirts, shoes on. They don't dress out. They don't get points for the day, and they end up failing. I don't know why 7% of visual and performing arts kids would get an F. That's a great question. These are good questions for us to ask. You know, science, math, of course, 14%. Math and science are always traditionally high. I am surprised at social studies. Social studies is traditionally low. So that's a good question to ask.
Dr. Hinman?
Yes.
Trustee Polis has a question.
Yes.
For physical education, they don't dress out. Do we know if they have the clothes to dress out in? Or the ability to wash those clothes? Do they have some place to wash them? Or are they so embarrassed because they're so dirty they can't wear them again?
Well, they also have water clothes that are available that are washed frequently as well, so they need to find the windows.
So I'm going to jump in.
Do they still
no.
Yeah, okay.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
Is there a penalty on the number of times you use loaner clothes? Because I know when I went to West Covina High, there was.
And it was counted for us as a dress out, but that was many years ago if we borrowed the clothes.
And I don't want to get into the rules and regs, but
I know, I just wanted to make sure they had clothes.
Well, here's the next level.
The ability to dress.
I'm one of those socioeconomic individuals, lower socioeconomic individuals, and one of those scenarios that you just laid out is true. Therefore, I have to wear loaners. Just by the fact of now having to wear loaners identifies me as So those are just lots of great discussions that the school site can have, and the teachers can solve those scenarios. Community support. This is baseline data, and I know that the principals are fired up about this data, and they assured me that these numbers will grow exponentially because they want more parent participation. They want parents to join the PTA. But the key to this, of course, is, and what they've shared with me, is that they're not going to allow chance to determine participation in the PTA. They're actually going to go out and meet and greet and start talking to more parents about joining the PTA, being part of the program, have areas that they can participate in, not just show up, not just pay your $10 and be a member, but actually have a role in the school. I think that's really important. And let me share another thing that I discovered in my qualitative research and my discussions with the community. There is a culture where the few do the work, which is not uncommon. But there's also a culture where the few alienate the masses, and that's one of the reasons why they don't come on board. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's just what people shared with me. I've shared that with the principals, and they are going to do their work to make sure that they break that cycle.
Did anyone bring up the cost of PTA? And if people couldn't afford to be a member, because how they gained access to volunteerism and because the PTA will call its members, you know, I can sign you, what am I interested in doing? Right. You don't have to pay to do that, do you?
I believe you do. No. To join PTA, you have to pay your $10. You can volunteer without that.
Right.
That did come up. But I would tell you again that culture piece of what my fear is what happens more often than not is I'm willing to call to participate, but I'm not willing to be part of that cabal, if you will. So I did hear that a lot.
Okay.
So I didn't hear the financial piece as much as I did. Although a couple of principals did share that with me. But the biggest concern was that this power group wanted to be the power group.
So in other words, that won't be allowed anymore.
That's entirely up to the site-based management. They've seen the data. Now, I will tell you, this is district data, and I sure didn't want to go in the weeds tonight and go over individual site data. You have that.
Right, yeah, I was going to ask about that, because Vine did a really good job and had 100% participation rate. Wasn't it? I thought it was Vine. Who had the 100%? It was really impressive.
We had 100% the we had 100% the year before. I know that this year our participation dropped, only in the sense because what they changed is that they did it by family. Where they used to do like mother, father, or they would do grandma, they would do more than one per family. They only did one per family.
Well, how did you get that 100%? What did you do?
My PTA did an excellent job phoning parents. We did phone blasts. We did to the point where we even sent reminders home. Teachers gave out homework passes. If you have your parents, if you at least bring one in, you'll get a homework pass, that kind of thing. So the kids were very motivated to stay on their parents. Dad, mom, I need this. Unfortunately, we were, our parents were able to pay the dues.
Did that translate into increased participation, or did the participation stay the same in terms of?
Participation stayed the same.
Okay.
The 100% participation probably that the year before last was probably because I know that I will sign up sometimes 5 people for PTA, my husband, myself, my son, and the kids. So
yeah.
But there's other people who do nothing, and you don't have. You're one of the more fluent schools in the district, and so I think that people are more apt to do that to support the school.
I think a lot of people think we're more affluent. You do have to remember we are still Title I. We do have more than 50% of our students on free and reduced lunch.
Well, when I look at the numbers, some of our schools have almost 80%.
Yeah, but I think that too.
So that's when I'm looking at it that way.
Right. It's
still high, but there, you have the other.
But we do.
Can
you are right.
100%.
We have people who can do more than one per household.
Right. That's what I'm trying to
get. Yeah,
and I am not rich, but they wanted the ice cream sundaes, and they stayed online.
Yeah, they wanted the homework passes. They wanted.
Well, they wanted. They could win a party, and they wanted to win the party. So, but not everybody can do that, and I know it gets really hard.
Well,
and we need to be cognizant.
Vine's numbers reiterate what the community has told us, which is the issue isn't wanting to be involved and sign up for PTA. It's the cliques that control it and isolate other parents. And that's what we need to work on, is what the data is showing. But we also have to remember they are an independent organization, so we have to draw that line and maybe discuss the role of PTA in our schools. If the trend continues the way it has,
President Shoemaker, I have the utmost confidence that our site principals are going to make sure that everyone who wants to be part of the PTA can be, and everybody that wants to have a role in the leadership will have an opportunity as well. That's just one of the commitments we've made, and I think that's one of the pieces of the data that you'll see in the board goals. Okay, business partners, this is, I believe, this list should be at least 3 times larger than this. These are district business partners. Now, the school sites might have some others at some minimal basis, but I will tell you from experience, if we reach out, There are people that want to hold our hand. There really are. But they aren't necessarily going to knock on our door. But they will be partners. The one that just jumps out at me, because I used to use them all the time, was Home Depot. You know, they'll always throw a tree or something or some. I didn't say that. or some shrubs or something on the way. Just as a good partnership or scholarship. There was a philanthropic group, I won't say the name, that wrote me a letter last week and basically kind of ripped me because they had a scholarship that they asked our students to apply for. And I said, this is when I first got here, I was making the round, I said, absolutely, that's awesome. So I sent out an email, and they wrote me this letter and said, you know, we had a $1,000 scholarship and not one student applied. And that's just culture. We just have to change that. And it's so changed. I'm not pointing a finger. I'm not saying that or bad. I'm saying it's sometimes we get so involved in what we do in our own world that it's difficult. We're asking more of these people. We're asking not only do you manage your school site, not only do you make sure that you have student achievement, not only are you sure that you support your teachers, but I want you to get out in the community and look for support there as well and develop those relationships. And this is the district level, but the site level is minimal.
Well, can I jump in here?
Please.
Really? What I find fascinating is, one, this list is so short, but two, a lot of our business partners are vendors in the school district. So it's not like the mall, who we don't actually conduct business with.
Right.
Athens does our trash. Public Agency Law Group is one of our attorney's firms. Ziemba and Prieto is one of our architects. School First Credit Union does some of our banking. I mean, you go through the list, and it's people who derive a benefit from us.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely like to see that change.
Well, I think we need to expand it for sure. And there are those that, again, if we reach out, they will take our hand. District grants, this is a philosophical question I need to have with the board, not tonight. But I want to talk about the fact that we don't apply for grants. There are millions of dollars that are available for application. I understand that with a grant oftentimes comes strings. And I don't like strings. I don't like federal strings. I don't like state strings. But some grants are just pretty much cash cows. They're just going to give you money. But you got to do the work, you got to do the application process. So, obviously, we were awarded this grant, the Hearst Ranch, which is awesome, by the way, the Kaiser Permanente. We just got a letter for $5,000 for Edgewood Mill for part of the Hearst Ranch program, which is awesome. But this number, I should be clicking this two or three times to show you the awards.
I had a question about this one, because when we were using California Consulting, I know we had a few successful ones, so I was surprised that it wasn't reflected in the awarded.
My understanding is we did not have any successful ones through that company.
I could have sworn on our board packet
we approved them.
A few of them.
No.
I think we probably approved the contractor and the application.
But we'll do the
due diligence. I just don't think so.
When I was first on the board, the grant writers were allowed to write themselves into the grants. So we had many more grants we applied for because the grant writer was able to be paid that way.
Right.
We can't do that anymore, so who has to write the grants now?
You can pay out a general fund for a grant writer. But not in
which we
in
did,
fun.
And it wasn't.
There are good grant writing companies, and obviously you need to do your due diligence to make sure that they have a track record.
Right.
And then there are those that just basically cut and paste what they did for one district into another, and the readers know that. So it's just about doing the work. Absolutely. I will tell you that there are good ones out there. It's an investment.
Right.
If I had. I'm not suggesting this, but another thought is, we have a lot of positional people, but having a person who is one of their responsibilities as an employee or to do grant writing is very commonplace. They don't get a dime more or less if they get the grant, but they do the work, they do the research. And weirdly enough, some people like that work. I can't imagine seeing that without grants. It just makes me shake even thinking about it. But people love it.
Some people have a gift.
something to explore. My point with the board, and we'll talk more in the future, is I think we need a better job. Mm-hmm. I really do. But I need no more history from you. Okay, now we can move in. So based on all that data that I gave you, and all that discussion, and all the high points, all the medium points, and all the baseline points, I sat down with this group right here at the table, and I said, if you were the board, what would be your priorities for the West Covina Unified School District? Now, this is a draft document. We are saying that we, as a staff, believe this is what we would make our priorities and be willing to be held accountable for if the board adopted these goals for the 15-16 school year. We're not asking for approval tonight. This is only discussion. And any changes that you want to discuss tonight, please feel free to throw it out, but this is not something we're going to iron out tonight. It's just going to share with you the staff recommendation. So, I'm going to step a little closer to the screen. We have it in A, B, C. Get it? Academic, behavior, creativity, innovation. So based on the data, we believe the West Covina Unified School District will receive a rigorous and challenging curriculum in preparation for college and career. Now, there's something wrong with the strategic plan. The strategic plan is a good thought, piece of information, but accountability is not necessarily always part of the strategic plan. This is more tied to LCAP than it is strategic plan. They're all three go together, but I just want you to know that everything on this list is in fact measurable, but we didn't put measurements in. Now, one of the trustees earlier today had a great idea, and I give it to you. If we're not going to put stated SMART goals, strategic, measurable, attainable, research-based, and timely, then at least give us the baseline data we're going to start with. So you have another copy there that I didn't put in the PowerPoint that actually states those baselines. So our contention is if that is your goal, we will in fact improve upon from that baseline. So we believe that by the end of 1560, we'll have full implementation of Common Core State Standards, K-12, in all subject areas. Now, have we all? The one with the percentages is loose. It's not attached. Yeah, thank you.
Right. Okay, this. But yeah. Wait. The
difference is it should say, when it says an actual, if you go to increase the number of.
This is my one. That's a new portion.
Yeah, like increase the number of A through G eligible should have a number there as to what it currently is.
Ms. Hawkins, which one is it?
There should be one that's black and white and blue.
Right, well, your packet, you said the one that has data.
Right.
Black and white here.
No.
No, we don't have it.
I don't have that one either.
No, we have that. Okay, we have that one. I'm sorry, I thought you said there was one with data.
There is.
Yeah, it has numbers on it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't have it.
We don't have it.
Okay. Here. So here's this one. Here's the one with the numbers on.
Okay.
Yeah, we did not get the one with the numbers.
Okay. We did not get the one with the numbers. Well, only I do.
No, I don't have it. Here, but none of us have it.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, don't take it from them. They need their data.
No,
they've seen it.
They've seen it.
Thank you.
Again, the only difference is the wording is the exact same, except when it says, for example, increased number of students if you're eligible, it'll say 38%. That's the number, that's the baseline number. So what we're saying is next year we'll be able to show you that we had an increase in students being A through G. By whatever percentage happens. And the reason, there's a reason behind that, and real quick. While this is baseline data, I just don't feel comfortable setting a SMART goal. Because I don't know how significant of a change we can make. I don't want to set a goal for 10% and hit 50. And I don't want to set a goal for 10% and hit 2, because I don't have that feel yet. I just know. What I am comfortable saying and that staff is comfortable saying, is there anything on this list we can improve upon that has a measurable number? So, both in patient account, California state standards, K-12, in all subject areas, we're well on our way. That should be a winner for us. Create district benchmarks in grades K-9 for reading, writing, and mathematics. That is summative, informative assessments across the district so we can tell school to school, classroom to classroom, how our students are doing.
Are any of those currently in place as of now, or is this the ground floor?
We had a writing assessment that we started this year, and we're starting with the reading and the mathematics assessment officially for this coming semester.
And I will also tell you, Trustee Menaz, the problem that we have is, and you'll see this when we look at the survey data, is that we need to do a better job letting teachers get together and have those discussions about the importance of common curriculum, about formative and summative assessments that are universal, and let them develop them. And we do. We have summer groups working, because right now you'll see in the data a significant group of our teachers don't see the value in it.
And is that what it is, the committee of teachers that develop
Correct.
These yeah. benchmarks?
Correct. Yeah. It's one person from every school in that department or in that grade level for language arts and math. And then the math folks are working with our two consultants.
Which is really important, because if I buy a packet of curriculum and I throw it on a teacher's desk, they're going to smile, nod their head, they're going to go in their classroom, and they're going to put it in the circular file. However, if they deliver it or develop it and implement it, it means a lot. So we have a lot of discussion to do in that area.
And is the idea for them the students to take it online, similar to what they'll do with the CASP or the smart balance?
We're not
balance?
There yet. No. Eventually. Eventually we could do that. What we would do is we would do the assessment, and then we would just get together in a room and start having a dialogue about who did what level why. And by the way, when you've really arrived in a professional learning community is where two teachers who gave a common assessment are willing and have the trust to show each other their results. Mm-hmm. And to be able to say, man, and on particular questions about World War II, my kids just didn't get there, but yours, what did you do? And can I come in your classroom and watch? And that's when you rely on the PLC.
And do we have a system that we use to that helps teachers analyze the data, like some kind of data analysis tool?
Well, what that will be is the SBAC, the California State Test that we give. That, at the end of the day, that's going to be our driving tool as to what kids need to learn.
But I'm talking about for the teacher-created assessments,
yep.
both formative and summative. Does the district have a system that teachers can run their assessments through, get the data?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What's it called?
Illuminate. We just adopted it this year.
It's going to be great. And that will house the questions too, so they can build their tests and exams. It's pretty cool.
There are some.
Again, I'm not suggesting that the teachers take from the question bank, but select from the question bank questions that they feels relevant to the curriculum that they're building. Because all the question bank questions in Illuminate meet California State Standards. We'll go into this much more in depth another time.
My question is, I understand that you feel you don't have, 6 months into the job, the understanding of the baselines for the district. As now a 10-year board member, I see these same things. Increase SAT, ACT.
Right.
We know what our baseline is. We have the percentages of students taking it. We know how many students are in the classes.
Yep.
So how are we as a board supposed to, one, evaluate you, but two, understand that the district is moving in the right direction without something measurable? So am I supposed to sit here next year and I hear we have, a 1% increase in this, which is the equivalent of two more students taking a test, and consider that a success? I mean, I feel for a lot of years now, we've been working on all of these plans to do things, and I'm still not seeing
dramatic growth.
The growth, the implementation. And I know our staff is working very hard, and there's several principals here who came in the middle of us trying to do all of this. And so
I'm at a point as a board member where I'm tired of seeing we're going to increase.
Right.
You know, that is one of the reasons, and I shared this with you. Mm-hmm. We were so strong about putting in percentages. I mean, I understand maybe we won't make those percentages, but at least it's a clear goal. And in some of these areas, you know, decrease the number of students receiving D's and F's in core content areas. I mean, that's what all of the programs we approve are supposed to be doing. All of the interventions we approve, all of the things that we sit up here and make decisions as board members are supposed to be doing.
Right.
And so how can I say, okay, we've decreased the number because 0.5% now, when after 10 years, yes, we had test scores go up, but the core areas are not changing. So
my response would be, because we weren't measuring it.
But we have been.
But then you might have been, but I have found no data that showed a longitudinal data like we went through today, which has pretty much been flatline. I will agree with you. A lot of that data is flatline. What I'm telling you is, because it was developed by this group, I strongly believe when we come in next year with a mid-year report, by the way, that we'll be able to show you growth or decreases, depending upon the category, in all those areas. Once we've worked that out in our heads, is what that means, then the following year, I would recommend putting in the SMART goals. Let me give you an example. It's going to be very difficult for this group to increase the amount of kids meeting A through G in 1 year. Those kids are, you know, a lot of those kids are already in the system. How do I take a junior who's deficient in 15 credits and get them through A through G by the end of the year to get a significant growth? It's 38% now. You know, I'm not confident to say we're going to get to 45. If you were to say by the year 2020, these are the levels we want, I would feel more comfortable with that. And by the way, at the end of the day, you can set whatever goals for us you'd like. I just would like our goals to be attainable. Putting 100% on something, not sufficient to do that, doesn't make sense. But if we can work together in open session later and talk about this and what you and I together believe are attainable goals, then by all means, I have no problem putting in the SMART goals.
Yeah, because at least as it pertains to me, A through G, I remember 2009 approving curriculum for West Covina High that said we are moving all classes so that they meet A through G. Granted, we have no control, really, if a student, like you said, doesn't pass.
Right.
You know, obviously we try and give every tool possible to those students so they're passing the classes. And so to see 6 years later, you know, we want to increase the number of students A through G eligible, it's, as a board member, I'm saying, okay, isn't that what we've been doing at least for the last 6 years, and why hasn't it worked? What do we put in here to measure that, okay, now that we have this goal here, how are we going to see it?
Here's the difference. When we come back to you, we'll be able to tell you, what did we do? Has it made a difference? How many kids have we moved? The kids who aren't meeting A through G that are in credit recovery or program improvement or intervention class, why? And what is our movement? If, in fact, after a year, we're at 43%, we'll be able to come back to you and say, this is what we did, this is why it didn't work, and this is our action plan to improve it. But we'll have answers to all those questions. Right now, I don't have them. I don't. All I can tell you is 43% of our kids are not A through G eligible. And there are probably a few tricks out there. Like, for example, you've approved a college and career coordinator. That's one of the first things that person's going to do. Is you're going to go to the two high schools and find out why are the numbers are what they are, meeting A through G. I mean, so the resources will be there. So I guess my retort to you is twofold. One, we have no problem with you setting goals for us. We would honor and respect you when you do it. Two is, I just personally don't have the background or the history to feel confident setting numbers as an instructional leader of the school district. I am comfortable telling you that everything on that list we will improve upon, which I think is significant. But again, these are board goals, not check-in goals. Solar Press, if that's okay. And again, we're not deciding this tonight. And I'm going to move pretty quick because the clock's ticking and I have a lot to do. Create district benchmarks. We just talked about that one. Decrease the number of students receiving B's and F's in core content classes. That which is monitored gets done. If a site principal knows that they have given X amount of B's and F's in a core area, they bring in that team, they have the discussion, they may not even be aware of it. I've had teachers in my history that have to fail 100% of their EL kids. And when they're told, they about drop out of their chair. They just don't realize when they fail this kid, that he just failed the entire EL population of his course. So that there's a culture psychological change when you start looking at the data in that way. Increase reclassification of EL students. Expand advanced placement international baccalaureate courses, enrollment offerings. You're well aware of that. We're on our way. This is the one I'm really excited about because it's an absolute no-brainer. Increase the number of SAT, ACT, and PSAT participants at grades 8 through 11. There is actually an 8th grade PSAT. It's not called PSAT, but it's the same college board. Increase the number of students in ACT. That's going to be a little tougher, but we think we can do it, even in a year's time. Increase the number of students taking AP and IB courses. I can guarantee you that's going to happen. Increase the number of students passing the AP and IB exam. I can guarantee you that can happen because we're going to invest in the training that we need to do to ensure that students, that the parents, excuse me, teachers are successful, and we're going to have those difficult conversations with teachers that maybe don't have great passing rates to offer more training or possibly making shift in that course if that's what we need to do. But we're going to see improvement there.
Quick question regarding AP. Students that qualified for the AP, and this is probably a high school principal question, maybe one principal. Students that qualified for the AP fee waiver, what's the lowest amount they had to pay?
$5.
Was it $5? They did. You guys did offer a $5 waiver. Okay.
And again, being socioeconomically disadvantaged should never get in the way of taking an AP or IB exam. You have to pre-identify those kids. We shouldn't have to make them come in and, you know, walk the walk of shame. We should know that information. Pull them aside and have that information about kids testing.
Do they have to pay at least $5?
I don't think so, no. No.
Didn't you say the lowest amount was $5?
They do not. That may be what West Covina has currently set up, but there are scholarship, again, reaching out to these groups I was talking about, would be more than happy to put a fund together to help kids pay for these exams. And we want them to take these exams, by the way. Not only for themselves, but so I can claim next year that we have a higher participation rate and a higher pass rate.
It makes sense.
Develop an academic support system to ensure students and parents understand the requirements, being college and career ready. 21st century, again, college and career coordinator is going to have their hands full. But they're going to rock and roll, and we're going to change that. Classrooms will offer the highest quality instruction through rigorous lesson design and integrate critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. We're using UCI Math Project to support and create the implementation of Common Core. Common Core Math is different. It's different. It's taking all of the courses, they're merging them. It's tough. If you taught that for several years, we're asking you to do things a lot different. We need to recognize that. We need to support our teachers. And we need to get them training. This group from UCI is a phenomenal group. Implementation of rigorous task strategies and classroom variation protocols developed by the Antonetti series, which I know you're already familiar with. We're just going to continue that into the classroom. Access data collection and assessment development tools such as Illuminate, which has been ours, as we just talked about. Design district-wide benchmark assessments, which we've already talked about. Which, again, data, data, data. Next year, I'll be able to show you the results of our district assessment. Implementation of rigorous curriculum writing program using Right from the Beginning and Beyond WFTBB strategies. Behavior, this is important. You know, the reality is everything we talk about is useless if we don't provide a safe and secure learning environment. So student behavior is paramount. Wesco United School District schools will maintain high expectations for student behavior by holding all students accountable. Students will be taught to be responsible members of our school community, providing them opportunities in societal norms. It doesn't necessarily mean a kid breaks a rule, we kick them out. It means a kid breaks a rule, we have to have a process and a strategy in place to ensure that they understand what they did and what are the repercussions of that action. Establish an implementation of the following: a human relations task force. We'd like to have an anti-bullying campaign at all of our school sites. You actually have O'Grady School Solutions on your board packet tonight. School resource officer, very excited about that. We don't know if that's going to happen or not, but we're not talking about full city services, hook and book. We're talking about an officer friendly, develop a relationship with our students, talk about responsibility. Support community service organizations through administrator membership, participation. I'll be talking to you a little bit more about that later. Our principals have agreed to reach out to our philanthropic organizations, become members. Again, if the Lions Club's sitting around and someone says, what should we support this year? If we have one of our principals in the room, that's a winner for us. I have an idea. Let's support Lion Elementary. Increase communication tools with parents. The website, and particularly with the elementaries, we're going to try to become more robust. And School Loop, I talked a little bit about with the middle school and high school. Again, every day, the parents will receive input from their teachers, assignments due, current grade, curriculum, etc.
I was going to let you say increase each site's PTA before I ask my question.
Yes.
I would really like added on to here, since it's about behavior. Mm-hmm. I had a nice talk with Ms. Hawkins today, and she explained to me the pyramid of behavior interventions, and that it's going to be implemented this coming year. I would like that on there, because I think that it's wonderful. I know I've heard from teachers, parents, and community members worried about behavior in the schools.
Yes.
This is, if they can look at that and we can explain that to them, we have it up as one of our goals, here it is,
yeah.
And it put it in the forefront, I think it would be very beneficial.
And we'll add it at one point. The board will have to wrestle back and forth to finalize what they want. And if there's consensus among the board, we'll do it.
And just to piggyback off what Kathy said, have the sites begin to invest in behavior RTI?
Mm-hmm.
That's already...
Well, yes, it's funny you should say that, because I actually told Ms. Hawkins, she told me about your conversation, I said, well, that's a variation of RTI. So we'll include that language in there, right? Okay. Increase each site's PTA. We'll move to C, creativity and innovation. Again, you're very familiar with these, so I'll go through quickly. Again, this is implementation more than study, because... Okay, so we've all been through there. You know what they are. We've talked about these ad nauseum, so I don't think I need to go over those. I'm going to move forward. Okay, I'm going to go really quick. Actually, I'm good. We're good on time. I am going to use a little cheat sheet notes here because I can't read that very well.
Dr. Hinman, when you finalize this document, can you on the back side put the one pager we have of our strategic plan?
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to marry?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I think maybe my goal for us should be to have that document completed before the start of school. Okay. So.
Thank you.
Okay, now I already warned everybody in the room, especially the principals, to not personalize this next piece. I'm going to go relatively quickly. And I'm only going to point out the areas of concern. Now, you might have different. And this is district-wide. You have each school site by site. The principals have their school site by site. They know their areas. Right, wrong, and different. The results are the results. It's not a perfect process, but it does give them a pretty good indicator of areas to celebrate, areas of concern, and areas that they're going to address. So, when I talked to the principals early, when I first got here, I drew a management bullseye, if you will. And I talked about what areas, as an instructional leader, as a school site leader, what groups are the most important. And the bullseye, the middle group, teachers are by far the most important group of stakeholder as a principal that the principal needs to address and make sure they support. It's the teacher's job to teach the kids. It's the principal's job to support the teacher. That's a relationship that has to exist for success. So I'm only going to go through two groups with each, both the elementary and the middle school, or elementary and the secondary, with the results of the survey. And let me find one now, please.
It's elementary.
Okay, so quickly, the way I would ask you to look at this is, again, and I said this to the principals, it's strongly agree or agree, this is the total amount of participants. If it's strongly agree or agree, you've done great. Great, don't worry about it. Celebrate that. But as a site leader, as a principal, or as a superintendent, what I'm concerned about, disagree and strongly disagree. These are all written into the positive. So I'm looking for, I really want positive results. So as I scan the elementary, I'm only going to do a few. I'm first going to look at number 6. I'm going to look at question 7, excuse me. Morale is high at the school. Now, I would ask the board to keep in consideration that this is a little bit skewed because this is elementary as a whole. If you look at the schools individually, you'll find that there are some significant differences at the school sites, which can make this data a little bit skewed. But as a whole, as a superintendent, what I'm looking at is morale is high. I'm seeing that 21% of the elementary school teachers disagree with that statement. The morale is high. That's a concern. It's not the end of the world, but we need to go back and ask those teachers, why is morale not high at our school? What do we need to do? How can we support you? The next one, the next one in line is, there's a whatever it takes attitude at this school, and you have 17% of your teachers don't agree with that. That we don't have a whatever it takes attitude. Again, that's a culture that ties directly with morale, and I know our teachers, our principals, are addressing that. Then I'm going to number 25, which is on the next page. This one is disturbing.
Can I ask a question about the last one?
Yeah.
Is it possible that the people who took this, that it says whatever it takes, maybe thought of it in a negative way, where people will break the rules, do whatever it takes, not just a let's go out and get them?
So that is a phenomenal question, because that's the whole point of the survey, is to go back to your staff and ask, how did we interpret this question?
Because I interpret it whatever it takes as really whatever it takes, good or bad or ugly.
And that's great. That's so powerful to allow the staff to answer that question. Maybe they interpreted it as you did, as different than how it was written.
Because then it makes some of the positive a little bit scary. if people read it the way I did.
Well, all of these questions are generated purely for discussion, so that the principals can go back to the staff and say, you know, administration listens to me. I got 12% here that think I don't. I'm trying. What do I need to do? Help me, teachers. Help me understand why you think there's 12% of our teachers here that don't think I listen. How can I? That's the relationship that they need to have with each other. So I'm now going to go to next page. I'm going to go to 25. This is, again, 25, this is a culture problem. My colleagues and I trust each other. You have 19% of your elementary teachers don't trust each other. That's a problem. Because when you start doing collaboration, when you start working in teams, if you don't, if there's not a level of trust, you're going to have a real hard time developing those common assessments. And again, that's a challenge for our principals. I have to point out number 30, because I will take full responsibility for that, that you have 20% of the elementary teachers do not value support by the district. So obviously that's something I'm going to personalize, and that will be my goal next year. When the survey comes out, I will be looking specifically at 30 and saying, was I able to drop that number based on how I addressed that? Number 31, my administrators are effective instructional leaders. 13% of the teachers disagree. I would like them to ask their staff why. 35, again, this goes back to that trust. The main team I work with is effective. 10% say no. And then the biggest one I have, and this is significantly different than secondary, as you'll see. Professional responsibility for student failure. The question says, I take professional responsibility when students fail. And at the elementary level, 22% or 37 teachers disagree with that statement. Now, the principals have to go to their staff and ask, help me understand what you think that question means. Now, I'll tell you, as someone that has asked this question in large groups, there is a fundamental traditional belief that the role of the teacher is that I teach, it's your job to learn. If you don't learn, it's not because I wasn't a great teacher, it's because you didn't learn. I think that's starting to change. I think that's culture. I think that's a discussion we need to continue to have in our classrooms. I believe that most people go into this profession because they have a calling, and their calling isn't to give great lessons. Their calling is to ensure that students learn. Sometimes we forget that because the system has been a little rough on us. All right, I'm going to move to secondary really quick, and we're almost home. And I will try to do this quickly. Secondary folks are a little tougher than elementary folks, let me just say. So I chose 1, 2, and 4. Administration treats others fairly. 15% disagree with that. If I'm a secondary principal, I want to look at that really hard on my school site. I'm not going to do the counselors as a whole, but let me tell you why I put counselors on there 4 or 5 times. And all across the board, our community, whether it's students, whether it's parents, whether it's teachers, have what I believe is a misperception of our counselors. Because they didn't score well across the board, but because I don't think they understand what the counselors do. When they give an orientation at the beginning, when they talk about their 40-year plan, when they talk about courses you need to be in, the pathway you need to be in, then the kid goes off to his next class, I don't think they remember that conversation. So when asked, you know, did your counselor explain to you college and career pathways, they mark no. Doesn't mean that students write or the counselor's right. It means we need to do a better job ensuring that they hear and get that message, so particularly that middle third. Number 7 is a bit alarming. Again, this is the biggest concern for our principals. Morale is high at my school. 24% say no. Again, a school that doesn't have a high percent is going to struggle. And that's a challenge for our principals. I'm sorry, that was classified. Thank you. We're outside of my school, 25%.
Yes.
Yeah, a quarter of our staff in the secondary level do not feel there's high morale at their school. But did you know what? That's nothing to shy away from. That's a great way to open up the school year if you're a principal. You go to your staff and go, huh, 25% of you guys don't think we have a high morale. What do we need to do? As a staff, help me solve this problem. Do we need to celebrate more? Do we need to have staff outings? Do we need staff development? What do I need to come to class more? What would you like me to do to help move this school forward in that area? Number 8, there's a whatever it takes attitude. Again, we'll have the disclaimer of the question. 24% feel there's not. Administrators listen to me. Number 9, that's 23% say they don't listen to me. Now, an administrator challenged me with that and said, well, Does that mean that I listened to them, but I didn't do what they wanted? Is that Brother Mark known? I said, I don't know. Go ask them. That's the power in these results. Then if you'll go to 23, you rephrase that. 25, again, I am going quickly, I apologize, because I'm right on the button. You go to 25, 15% of our secondary folks don't trust each other. Too big of a number. This one is bonding for me personally, something I'm going to take on. That 30% of our teachers do not believe that collaborative teams, working in collaboration is important. So, I'm sorry, common assessments. We were just talking about common assessments and how important they are. But I have 30% of my staff and my teachers don't believe it's important. That's training. That's discussion. That's rationale. That's showing the research. You know, teachers will always say, don't tell me, show me. Show me the research. And we need to do a better job of that. Of course, I want to pick number 30. I support, I value the support by the district. 31% do not value the support by the district. So we need a better job cleaning that up. 31 is another one of those questions of what, explain that to me. So you have 27% of secondary folks do not think the administrator is an effective instructional leader. It's a great question to say, what, you know, ask the staff, what does that mean? Does it mean that I can't help you develop a calculus lesson? Well, if it is, then that'll never be a fact. Or is it that I need to do a better job of articulating mission, vision, strategic plan of the district, and support you in that mission vision. 32 goes right hand in hand with that, which is the mission vision is clear and guides my work. You have 20% of secondary folks that disagree with that statement. And last, but by no means least, and we're going to wind up here, 37. Number 37, professional responsibility for student failure. 38% of our teachers, or 50 or 63 total, do not believe that they have professional responsibility for student learning. Now, again, I don't have an answer to that. I will tell you that's not unusual. That's about a norm. So don't be disheartened. If you go to your sister district next door, you'll see the same thing. But now that we see that number, now that I see that number, I feel personally charged with going out and having those deep conversations about why we do what we do and what support are you getting to help to make sure that those kids have success. So, I want to thank you guys. I know we've got to move right into closed session, but thank you all. I know there's a lot of information threw at you. I'll look forward to working with you on more goals, no more clarification. And I want to thank everybody here in the room for coming, and we'll follow up with this next time we get together, and I'd love to hear from you and your thoughts, and we'll be waiting for you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Okay, before we get up, just let us go ahead and adjourn into closed session, please. Is there anyone here who would like to address the board regarding closed session items? See no one. The board will go into closed session beginning at 6:49.